the world's most insane internet radio talk show. This is Injustice Radio, presented by MofoBooks.com. I am your host, author, and fair trial advocate, Lucas Stidham. We are broadcasting live from Concord, North Carolina, where it is just to challenge that which is unfair. America, this is your show.
Welcome to Injustice Radio. I'm Luther Stidham, your host. Got a pretty good show planned for you today. I've got I got something very, very important to cover. Something that a lot of you listening right now have been anticipating. I've received numerous emails about something very special coming today. So I thought I'd go ahead and just prepare the episode for it. And if we have time, I have something else we'll go into as well, and it pertains to both pertain to my case. The first and most important is the petition, my petition online right now. If you'll go to mofobooks.com, M-O-F-O-books.com, on every page, about 2.5 inches down in the center from the top, you'll see you can help. Click here to sign Luther's petition, little blue button. Need you to do me a favor. I need you to go on there and sign that thing. It's very important. I only have about 68-something signatures left, something in that area. And the game begins. And trust me, when we're done with this segment, you'll understand what I mean by Judge Olamide Lewis, you had your chance. Time is up. Now it's my turn. All right, if you got a copy of the book, you're going to want to turn to page 189, chapter 18. We're going to start talking about judge interference into my appeal process, which is extremely illegal. I've got some goodies here for you. I've got a recording that we're going to listen to, and I also have some responses from some attorneys that I got off of Avvo. I'm sure y'all have seen the commercial, Avvo.com, and I'll read the questions that I put in there to them. And we'll kind of take it from there. All right, page 189 in my book, Falsely Accused Forever Branded, MOFOBooks.com. That's where you can pick it up. You can go to any bookstore in the world right now and pick the book up. You can get it on Amazon. Just go and type the name of the book, Falsely Accused Forever Branded. By the time you get to the forever, or the four rather, in forever, the book name will pop up. Purchase the book. It's for a good cause. For every dollar that I make, it buys two more books, and then the rest goes into a defense fund. And by the time we finish this radio show, you'll understand why. All right, I'm going to start reading, kind of bring you up to par. If you haven't had the book, you're going to also want to get some paper and a pen or something to write with, because I need you to write down these pages. Page 189, that's most important. It's called Chapter 18. The subheading is 11:45. Now, this is the day of my what was supposed to be trial. It turned out to be nothing more than an orchestrated plea hearing. That's all it was. Brandy, surrounded by Agent Gitt and his family, wept carelessly, on cue and loudly, as I passed her in the aisle. I took my seat as the prosecutor began to speak. We are back on the record in a matter of Luther Luke Stidham. He's charged with 2 counts of indecent liberties with a minor, and by way of bill of information, 1 count of second-degree rape, District Attorney Everhart said. Now, District Attorney Everhart, that is Meredith Everhart. You'll read throughout the book. You'll learn who she is. And then Mike Ramos, of course, was my incompetent defense attorney. Agent Gitt is a former special agent for North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation. I invite you to do some research on those characters. They're some of the most shadiest people, at least what you'll find. I'm not saying they're all like that, but they're going to be some of the most shadiest people that you'll ever meet. Meredith Everhart concludes by saying, rather by asking, Mr. Ramos, how does your client plead? Your Honor, he tenders a plea of guilty pursuant to North Carolina versus Alford, Mike Ramos replied. If I may approach with the plea transcript and the worksheet, District Attorney Meredith Everhart asked. Please, and there is a bill of information which requires your client's signature, Judge Locklear replied. As he looked to Mike responded by nodding his head. Now, that being read, what happened was Judge Locklear was a Superior Court judge. He was an emergency Superior Court judge. The reason he was emergency Superior Court judge was because I had Ola Mae Lewis, senior resident of District 13, which includes Brunswick County, North Carolina. I had her recused from my case for several reasons. I'm not going to go into all of them on the show. We don't have enough time. But I had her recused for one particular reason. In mine was because she and I never got along. She as a judge and I as a police officer, I didn't fit in. I wasn't part of the clique. If I wouldn't arrest people I know for possession of marijuana, simple possession, then I wouldn't arrest you. So that made me different. And it's always been officer's discretion whether as to he or she will arrest you or not. So don't ever be fooled. There's only three things an officer is actually forced to arrest you on. That's any felony, domestic violence, and a protection order violation. All right. So it was always officer's discretion. So I used my discretion. I didn't waste my time and your taxpayer dollars on simple crap like misdemeanor possession of marijuana. It's not going to happen. Not in this day and time. Anyway, so I had Ola Lewis recused for that reason. She was really good buddies with my chief. If you've read the book, then you will remember, and you'll know what I mean when I say that chief and I also didn't get along. Kind of the same situation. He was just not the type of character that had the same morals that I did, and we didn't see eye to eye. So there was a little bit of animosity there. So I had early on, I had Mike Ramos from Charlotte, North Carolina, recuse her. So he goes to her and he tells her, Luke doesn't want you to hear his case. And she responds, okay, that's fine. I don't want to hear the case anyway. So whether or not a motion was filed is irrelevant in this matter, because she acknowledged that there was an issue, that she could not remain impartial. So therefore, she recused herself. Now, during my time in prison, I fought her. I fought her repeatedly, and she blocked everything I do. Now, when a judge recuses themselves, they recuse themselves forever. They can no longer hear anything that you file in the court. So she had no authority. She wasn't the trial judge, so she had absolutely no authority when I started my what's called post-conviction relief. It's called an MAR, MAR, Motion for Appropriate Relief. And lo and behold, I did not know it, but she got a hold of it, and she, of course, denied it. Well, once she denies it, the way the North Carolina is written is it's called procedural bar. What you don't say the first time, you can't bring up in a second motion. In other words, you take it all the way to the United States Supreme Court, but you can't add to it or take away from it. If you've read the book, then you'll remember where I struggled to have Mike Ramos release my case file so that I could start my post-release conviction relief. Well, he never responded. North Carolina also carries a one-year limitation to where you have 1 year to exhaust all state remedies before you are allowed to proceed to the federal courts. 13 months after I was convicted, 1 month past my time limit, the North Carolina State Bar finally got involved and forced Michael Ramos to release my case file. Now, I don't have a letter to back that up. Just all of a sudden, my case file mysteriously appeared at my uncle's address, and then I received a letter in prison. Let me see if I can find it real quick. It is in the book. It has been reproduced in the book. That is the actual letter. The only thing that's different about it is I changed my uncle's address. The world doesn't need to know that. But his actual letter says to me that he apologizes for his delay. Then he says it was his understanding that my now ex-wife was going to drive 300 plus miles to pick up my case file. He then goes a little bit further and says, you know, please note that your entire case file has been sent to your uncle at this, here's his name, here's his address. So I write him back. I'm having problems finding it right now. I'm trying to talk and look through the book at the same time. I wrote him back and I said, listen, you know, you're only trying to cover up your neglect. And you've made three very bad mistakes in your letter. The first mistake you made was, who gave you permission, unless it was I that gave you permission, to send a case file pertaining to what's called, what North Carolina calls, certain juvenile victims in a sex offense case, to a non-party individual. I have to be the one to give that permission. Second, unless I gave you my uncle's name, where did you get it from? And last, unless I told you to send my case file to my uncle, how did you get his address? So I busted him in three different ways there about lying about what he was actually... They knew what they were doing. They knew they pushed me beyond my one-year time limit, but I ignored the rules. I pushed it all the way through to the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals and passed Judge Lewis. Every judge in the federal court agreed with what I said for the most part, but repeatedly denied me on procedural grounds because Mike Ramos... And this is only my opinion, and conspiracy with Ola Lewis and Meredith Everhart denied me access to my case file. So they forced me to file my first motion for appropriate relief without a single string of evidence. So everything I was saying was completely unsupported. And I knew that, but I had to make that effort. So if we go back to page 189 again, I want to bring something to your attention one more time because I know I've completely went off track here, and I've got a bad habit of doing that. But let's go back here. Let's real quick. The judge, or Meredith Everhart, asked my attorney, how does your client plead? Mr. Ramos replies, Your Honor, he tenders a plea of guilty pursuant to North Carolina versus Alford. That's called an Alford plea. The prosecutor then speaks up and says, rather she asked the judge, if I may approach with a police transcript and the worksheet. The judge responds, please. He then turns and looks at my attorney and says, and there is still a bill of information which requires your client's signature. Mike nodded his head yes. I didn't. I leaned over to him and I simply said, I ain't signing shit. Don't even ask. Mike replied, you don't have a choice. We'll see. Was my response. But I knew I was beaten. I was too aggravated and ill to let Mike see that. So that bill of information, if you remember, the bill of information is on the second degree rape. All of a sudden it went from consensual to force. Here's Meredith Everhart's words. And by way of bill of information, one count of second degree rape. And then the judge acknowledges, on the record, by the way, this is in a transcript of plea hearing, page 15, line 5. Please. And there's a bill of information which requires your client's signature. The judge responds. No, the judge tells that to my attorney. Now, so skip ahead a little bit. I'm out of prison. I'm doing some research on Avvo. Here's the question that I posted on Avvo.com. Is a felony conviction reversible if the indictment was dismissed and I refused to sign the information? One returning response, that would be an issue that could be raised upon appeal. My advice is to seek an attorney outside of that district. That come from a Christopher Welch in Jacksonville, North Carolina. I responded, the prerequisites for a sufficient waiver established by our Supreme Court is understood to be that a defendant can waive a bill of indictment in a felony case only when represented by counsel and when both the defendant and his counsel sign a written waiver of indictment. Now, that written waiver of indictment is the bill of information. on the very bottom, and there have been a couple of guests here at the studio that I've showed this to. At the very bottom, it says, I, the undersigned defendant, waive my right. Blase, blase, so forth. I refuse to sign that. The North Carolina courts, in applying 15A-642C, which is the statute for the waiver, have held that neither a tendering of a guilty plea by defendant nor the tendering to the trial court of an unsigned waiver could be considered sufficient waivers of a defendant's right to a formal indictment. That was cited in State v. Wilson, North Carolina Court of Appeals. Now, so I went on and asked a second question. What legal avenue can I pursue if a female judge that I personally knew, and that personally is in quotation marks, blocks all of my attempts at filing an appeal? Daniel Meyer, criminal defense attorneys, Durham, North Carolina, then responded. Because actually, when I posted that question, you know, you do some additional information. And I told him why I had her recused. There are several reasons involved. I had her recused, and she was not supposed to be listening to, I mean, she's not supposed to be looking at any of my motions. Well, here's his response. You said he asked the judge to recuse herself, the judge being Olamé Lewis. And you say that all he being Mike Ramos, my incompetent defense attorney, all he did was ask her not to hear your case. Dot, dot, dot. Look, they call those a clips. That is all a recusal is. If she didn't hear your case, she isn't involved in the MARs or the appeals. And this is most important. Now, again, I'm reading to you an email I received back from Daniel Meyer, criminal defense attorney in Durham, North Carolina. Here's his response, the remainder of this response, most importantly. So listen carefully and crank the speakers. The trial court, plus a judge would have no power to block an appeal. That would go to the Court of Appeals. The trial court does not grant or deny a notice of appeal. You file a notice of appeal, and it automatically goes to the Court of Appeals. The trial court has no control over that, and he's absolutely correct, unless you happen to have Olamé Lewis interfering with your case. Here's what the North Carolina Rules of Appellate Procedure state. You have to file the notice of appeal in the trial court of jurisdiction. In my case, Brunswick County, North Carolina. I did that. And I am, by the way, sometime this week, I mean, I'm going to find that notice of appeal, because when I filed it, the clerk at the time stamped it filed and made a horrible mistake. She mailed it back to me. Not the original appeal, but a copy of it. That's what she has to do. So a copy of it was mailed back to me, stamped, filed, the date and the time. This was in 2010. I'm thinking somewhere around May or June-ish. Well, the clerk, according to the rules of appellate procedure, is then required to forward that to the Court of Appeals. Somehow, Judge Lewis got her hands on it. And she has been interfering in my appeal process for over 5 years. My appeal process, my notice of appeal, pertains to subject matter jurisdiction. When that judge acknowledged on the record that I refused to sign that bill of information, he made no further inquiries as to why I did not. If you read the book, what you actually read the book is in the transcript. There is no pause. He did not ask me, why didn't you sign it? Will you sign it? Do you waive your right? He did not ask me any of that. He made no inquiries. He just rolled with the flow. He then let the prosecutor get up there and spill her manufactured factual basis for this plea agreement that I refused to enter. So that is called lack of subject matter jurisdiction. Again, that case file that handles that is State versus Wilson, North Carolina Court of Appellate Procedure. No, I'm sorry. State versus Wilson, North Carolina Court of Appeals. They have ruled. The North Carolina courts, in applying 15A-642C, have held that neither a tendering of a guilty plea by defendant nor the tendering to the trial court of an unsigned waiver could be considered sufficient waivers of a defendant's right to a formal indictment. Further on in that citation, they finish up simply by saying, and any conviction thereof, as a result thereof, is null and void. So that's why Ola Lewis is blocking it. She really has no choice but to block it, because if she allows it to go to the Court of Appeals, then it's an automatic dismissal for my case. And through some further inquiries into Avro.com with his attorneys, one has said that he would submit the remainder of my case to the North Carolina Innocence Inquiry Commission based on some discovered evidence in my case file that was hidden from me. Now, another attorney responded. This is David Morgan in Richmond, Virginia, and he says, you need to speak with another North Carolina defense attorney about this. Probably, now these are his words, probably wise to get someone from out of the district, the judicial district in which the judge hears cases. So this guy's telling me, listen, you're not going to get any help in that district. Of course, I already know that. But being that Ola Lewis has her hands on this notice, it's very hard for me to even get local attorneys. I'm in Concord, broadcasting live from Concord, to hear this case. I had one, and we had discussed a price. When he found out that his name is John Lewis, he's in Concord, North Carolina, and I hope you get this radio show because I'm going to put you on blast. What he did was, I was sitting in his office. We agreed to a price. He agreed to take my case. And when he heard that it was written in the transcript of plea hearing, page 15, line 5, where the judge says, please, there's still a bill of information that requires your client's signature, he about jumped out of his chair and said, that's in the record? And I said, absolutely. He said, oh, I can get that dismissed. That's a piece of cake. And until he found out, I should have kept my mouth shut, but once he found out that Ola Lewis had taken a personal interest into my conviction, that she had recused herself, and then she went against her own recusal and heard my MAR and denied it, then he then refused to stop taking my call. Matter of fact, I tricked him and called him through a blocked number, and he said, listen, he said, Ola Lewis, at the time, she was running for judicial justice, North Carolina Supreme Court, and he said, it won't be like you going up against Ola Lewis. It will be like my party going up against Ola Lewis. My response was, the hell with your party. This is my life we're discussing. And you said you would take it. Now you said you won't because Ola Lewis has taken a special interest in this thing. That's unethical. Extremely unethical. Another attorney replied, named John Lloyd from Birmingham, Alabama. His response, you really need to consult with a local attorney about this one. There are too many issues for anyone on here to answer in a simple post. So here in a minute, we're going to play that recording for you. And what you're going to hear in this recording is it's going to be Tammy Pierce. Tammy Pierce was Ola Mae Lewis's secretary, personal secretary. So a year after I filed this notice, I got my return. I had no idea Ola Lewis was sitting on this thing. So what happened was I had my ex-wife call, and she called Ola Lewis's office. Simply said, you know, what's going on? It's been a year. We've heard nothing. Luke should have been appointed counsel by now. Matter of fact, he should already be released from prison. Ola Lewis wouldn't take the call. She let it go to voicemail. Well, Ola Lewis then had Tammy Pierce call my wife back. My wife played that same trick. Except Tammy Pierce made a horrible mistake. She left a voice message. And I have that voice message for you today. And here's what she's talking about. She speaks of an order. If you remember, Ola Lewis reviewed, they call it in the court system, heard, In other words, she just read my motion for appropriate relief, and she denied it. And the way North Carolina rules are written is, once it's denied, you're therefore barred from filing. You only get one time to do it. You only get one chance to do it right. If you don't do it right, sorry, so sad. It's called a procedural bar. Now, it wouldn't apply to me, one, because Ola Lewis didn't have jurisdiction to begin with. You just heard that from the attorney. I just read that to you from the attorney. She wasn't my judge. She had no right to hear it to begin with. Here, I'll read it again. If she, Judge Ola Lewis, didn't hear your case, she isn't involved in the MARS. The MARS is a motion for appropriate relief or appeals. Plus, a judge would have no power to block an appeal. That would go to the Court of Appeals. That being said, we're going to take a break, come back. When I do, I'm going to play a little present for you.
Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com.
All right, as promised, and by popular demand, let's say, there's been quite a bit demand going on about this recording I'm about to play. I've received numerous emails about playing it because of what I mentioned in the book and then about me talking about it on the radio show. So here we go. I'm going to cut this thing on, and I may have to adjust the volume real quick, but I think it's pretty loud. Here we go.
Stage message.
This is Tammy Pierce with Judge Ola Lewis's office. In regards to the MAR, the MAR was denied. If you have any questions, you can call me back at 910-253-8249. The order denying and barring Mr. Stidman's MARs was signed July 17th, and it says that future claims, petitions, or motions herein after filed by the defendant barred, and the court shall not address the same. If you'd like a copy of that order, it is in the clerk's office, and we can get someone to send you a copy. 910-253-8249. Thank you.
All right, real quick, get a pen, get a paper, and I'm also learning that I'm looking at an email right now I've just received. I've got some guests in the UK listening to the radio show. Apparently it's about 8:30 over there. So thank you very, very much. Thank you very much. Thank you for tuning in. Let me play that one more time. I want you to hear something. You're going to hear two dropouts. I don't know why I've done that. You're going to hear two dropouts in this telephone call. The first portion she's talking about is she acts like she's completely ignoring the question of why is it no one addressing my appeal. By the way, telephone line is open, 704-707-4670. That's 704-707-4670. Now, I'm going to play this again. I may have to bump around here to find it because this is important. Let me see if I can find it. Here we go.
And it says that future claims,
there we go,
petitions or motions here.
That's what I want you to hear.
July 17th. And it says that future claims, petitions or motions herein after filed by the defendant barred, and the court shall not address the same. If you'd like a copy of that order, it is in, and it says that future claims, petitions, or motions herein after filed by the defendant barred, and the court shall not address the same. After filed by the defendant barred, and the court shall not address the same.
That's me, by the way, just hitting rewind. I want to make sure everyone hears that. That's Ola Lewis' secretary relaying a message to my wife that she is not. She says the court shall not address the same. She's saying that she's not going to allow the courts to hear anything else that I file, which includes that notice of appeal. So take note of that phone number. Let's find it again, and then do me a favor. First, we need to get this petition signed. We need to get this thing finished, and I need to sign, and then here's my goal. We actually also have, I wanted to welcome some guests in the media. There's a few newspapers listening right now, and there are also two television stations listening. I know this because I sent emails out I sent out about 20-ish, and I have several responses. I haven't gone through them all yet here, so if you hear me clicking on the computer, just laugh at me, ignore it, and keep listening to the recording. So welcome to the show. My name is Luther Stidham. This is Injustice Radio. Get you a pen and paper, pencil and paper, crayon, I don't care what you use, write it on the sidewalk. Get this phone number, and I want to flood the Brunswick County clerk office, or rather, you know what, I think this is not the clerk office. I think this is Ola Lewis's office, and this is her secretary. And here's what we're going to do. I'm going to get this petition finished. I'm going to download it to the computer, print it out. I'm going to send a copy of the recording that you're listening to right now and a copy of the notice of appeal stamped filed. I'm going to upload that notice of appeal to my website, mofobooks.com, mofobooks.com, so that you can view it and you can see what it is exactly you're supporting. And then I'm going to mail out about 100 copies to various newspapers from New York Times, the Washington Post, People Magazine, Time Magazine, you name it. It's going to Charlotte Observer, newspaper in Concord. I have I bought a list of a ton of newspaper articles where you can submit them to there. I'm hoping I have a friend that is also a writer for several newspapers, I believe it is. She stopped by my shop the other day, picked up several books, took them with her to Detroit, and I believe New York. I want to say hey to Mr. Les Hart. Thank you very much for your help. I hope one day that I'm in a position to return the favor, pay it forward, so to speak. Anyway, let's do this. Let's get this phone number back up. And you know, I don't really care if you. I was going to say don't flood the calls yet, but you know what? I really go ahead. Start tomorrow. I mean, just knock the phone off the ringer. Let's call Ola Lewis and let's tell this crazy woman to listen. You're breaking the law here. You're interfering. You should have never, ever, ever heard the first motion. You don't have jurisdiction. Stop interfering with Luther's appeal process. You're a dirty, dirty woman. Stop doing it. You can look her up online, Judge Ola Mae Lewis, and see. I'm hearing that she's gotten involved with some pretty nasty lying when she was running for justice in North Carolina. She was up against Mark Martin, and it's my understanding that he ripped her a new one. So guess who is going to also get a copy of the petition? I'm going to file the petition along with a grievance with the North Carolina State Bar, as well as the Judicial Committee. It's all going to be a package. It's going to go to the Judicial Committee, the State Bar, all these newspapers, all the media that I have on my list, and we're talking about Fox News, CNN, World News, big time. Dr. Phil's show, Steve Harvey. And I'm going to flood the media with this thing and see what happens, see how it turns out. But one of the last people I'm going to send one to is Mark Martin. He is the newly elected justice in North Carolina Supreme Court. And then Ola Lewis will receive hers last. So that's what I mean by when I say you had your chance. You had your chance, woman, to do the right thing. You chose not to do the right thing. Now you shall pay for it. One more time, I'm going to play this recording, get the phone number, and let's start calling her tomorrow. Let's flood the phone system down. Here we go.
objections, petitions, or motions herein after filed by the defendant barred, and the court shall not address the same. If you'd like a copy of that order, it is in the clerk's office, and we can get someone to send you a copy. 910-253-8249. Thank you.
Here's that number again.
253, and we can get someone to send you a copy. 910-253-8249. Thank you.
To replay this message, press.
There you go. There you have it. You heard it with your own ears. So it's not something that I'm making up. It's she has blocked anything that I do. She will not allow the court to address it. And the little two fade outs that you hear, what she actually says is, she says motions, writs, or petitions. But no judge has the right. I mean, they can do that under procedural bar for motion, writ, or petitions, if they are the judge who has jurisdiction. That's written in North Carolina law under procedures for post-conviction relief. However, number one, she didn't have jurisdiction. Number two, there is no law written in the United States, period, that allows any judge to interfere with the deliverance of a notice of appeal to the higher courts. So she has plainly displayed that she cannot remain impartial. Judge Lewis needs to be reprimanded in a fashion that she is removed from office. She is a danger to society. And I'm telling you, folks, everyone listening right now, Ola Mae Lewis, senior resident, Superior Court Judge Ola Mae Lewis, is a danger to society. She runs that court system in Brunswick County, District 13, like she wants to, how she wants to, when she wants to. And she literally has several people afraid to go up against her. She rules it down there with an iron fist, so to speak. She was voted in office, and she can be taken out of office. And it is up to us, the electing taxpaying public, to remove her from office. I am not the only one she's done this to. I am just one of the worst cases she's done this to. And then let's ask this simple question. Anybody out there have any experience with background checks? The little girl in my book, the alleged victim, her name is Brandy Lewis. Now, Brandy, of course, is not her real name, but it's extremely close. And then we have Ola Mae Lewis. The last names are spelled the same. And my attorney, Mike Ramos, had a business partner at that time whose name was Mark Lewis, spelled the same. After some public record search, we were able to locate some documents that showed Mark A. Lewis, attorney there in Charlotte, North Carolina, had been representing the Lewis family, Brandy Lewis and her mother and father, as early back as 1996. Now, that's just what we found. We didn't spend days looking either. We don't have the experience to do that either. And then at the time, the latest that we could find was 2000. So if we could somehow find and prove that there is a blood relationship there or a marriage relationship, that would help tremendously. So anyone out there listening who has that kind of experience or knows someone who does, I would be forever grateful if you could lend a hand. Just send me an email at injusticeradio@gmail.com. One more time, that address is injusticeradio, one word, @gmail.com, and it will get forwarded to me immediately to my personal email account. The telephone call-in number is 704-707-4670. That's 704-707-4670. All right. So the Ola Lewis there, you know, blocking my whole appeal and reaching this thing, stopping this appeal from reaching the North Carolina Court of Appeals, what would have happened was this. The clerk would have forwarded it to the Court of Appeals. The Court of Appeals would have then docketed this thing and appointed me counsel. And because I was in prison, so I didn't have to pay for an attorney. And instead, what she's done was just block the thing. So that's why it is so important. She needs to be stopped. Injustice was done. And here's my invitation. This invitation goes out to Attorney General Roy Cooper, who is aware of the situation and who refuses to respond. And I can prove to you he's aware of this situation because I have his signature on documents proving that he signed for the letters that we sent him. This invitation is open to Judge Olamide Lewis, Mike Ramos, and Prosecutor Meredith Everhart. What are you cowards afraid of? Here's the deal. My challenge to you is this. I know what if I only knew then what I know now, I would have never been stripped of my badge. I would have laughed in your face. So my challenge is this. All right, statutory rape is a B1 felony. I served 4.5 years in prison. That B1 felony was someone who's never been convicted like myself, doesn't have a criminal record. I would spend, 40 years in prison? So here's my challenge to you cowards. Dismiss the case. Put me back on house arrest. Hell, you can even put me in jail if you want to. I don't care. We'll do a fast and speedy trial, 6 months. And this time, keep your dirty, rotten, stinky hands out of the case. Now I have the case in my hands. I know what my case file looks like. So why don't any of you cowards try to take me back to trial? That's my challenge to you. You don't have hair on your ass if you don't. You personally are a coward. Ola Lewis, you're a coward. Mike Ramos, you're a coward. Meredith Everhart, you're a coward. Roy Cooper, you're a piece of shit and a coward. So my challenge to each one of you is simply dismiss the case, put me back on house arrest, or put me in jail. It's okay. I've spent 4.5 years in prison. I can deal with 6 months in jail time. It's a piece of cake. I'll sleep the whole time. But take me back to trial. If you think I'm so damn guilty, take me back to trial. Now, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen here. They're going to be upset that I call them cowards. And that's okay, because they are cowards. And they won't take me up on my offer simply because they know now that I know what they hid from me. They hid from me negative for semen DNA test conducted by the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation. They hid the fact that they had found child pornographic images on the alleged victim's computer. I can prove that to you. I'm running out of time today, so I'm gonna try to avoid speaking fast because I'm trying to get in too much today. But I promise you this: I have some more recordings. You know what? I might even just tease you with some of it. Just maybe in the next go around. I'm hoping to get a guest here from next week. I'm hoping to get a guest here from this organization. I can't think of the name of it right now, but. What he's doing, from what it's been explained to me, he's trying to do what I'm doing, meaning I'm trying to help people. I'm trying to help other people with their stories, with their life strategies, issues, and especially inmates coming out of prison. Why am I so inmate friendly? Well, because I'm a convict and I've served the time. I've been on both sides of the fence, and I'm here to tell you, you want to stop recidivists? You need to help people coming out of prison somehow. Not you personally, but the people who are the decision makers. You see, if you've stripped all these programs from inmates in prison, and you're just kind of like patting them on the butt, giving them $40 if they've been in prison for 2 years, patting them on the butt and sending them out the door. I mean, how dare you? Shame on you for doing that. All you're doing is sending a man or a woman back out. What if they have kids? What if they have family? And you put them in a predicament where they can't get a job. What are they going to do? What would you do? If you had a hungry wife at home and a hungry baby at home, and the only thing you are good at because you are not rehabilitated in prison is robbing, what would you do? Would you let your wife and your children cry and go hungry? Or would you find a gun and you go rob a store to feed them? What would you do? That's for your choice. Be right back.
Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com.
All right, welcome back. I'm Luther Stidham. This is Injustice Radio. Now, where I was heading with that is simply this. The SBI, State Bureau of Investigation, if you do your research online, 2010, there's a lot of articles in Raleigh News and Observer. Mandy Locke is the reporter who covered a lot of this stuff. And she uncovered some of the, unheard of scams that the SBI was involved in. It triggered some 300 plus investigations into individuals that the SBI put in prison. The SBI did this, put them in prison, and they were completely innocent. Two of the individuals, black, by the way, so all of my black listeners right now, I want you to pay attention. I want you to crutch your radio up, and I want you to listen to me very good. If you're driving, pull over. If you got TV going, cut it off. Listen to me. The SBI was responsible for this. There were two individuals who were convicted and sentenced to death. Both were black. The evidence was hidden and falsified by the North Carolina State Bureau of Investigation. When they finally cleared their name and proved that the two individuals, two black men, were innocent, what do you think had happened? They had already been executed. Oh, sorry, my bad. Didn't mean to kill you, but you're innocent, by the way. That's not how it works. I have the story. I have tons of newspaper articles, and I believe Mandy Locke is the one who reported that, so don't take my word for it. Contact her, Mandy Locke at Raleigh News and Observer. So SBI is involved in my case. Now, hear me out. I'm not saying that every SBI agent is bad. They're not. Not every cop is bad. But a good majority of them are. And they all should be stopped. They all should be taking their badge from them. The little shiny badge doesn't grant extra rights. You can believe that. Just because that badge shines don't mean that you're better than anybody else. Anyway, so the SBI finds child pornographic images on Brandy's computer, Brandy Lewis. I am going to play some of this stuff here. I'm going to speed up. I'm going to skip a few things, and we'll touch on this later. Right now, I want to give you some teasers here, okay? For the next upcoming show, I don't know, two or three shows from now, we'll see. I'll let you know ahead of time. SBI agent, there's an interview. You'll read it in the back of my book. I talk about an interview. It's called The Sinister Telephone Call. That's real. That's actually real. I've got the whole recording. So he's talking to this Brandy, and they've set her in a child's room. Now, when I say child, I mean a child designed for a 4, 5, or 6 year old. And there's a reason for that. That's not the only room they've had available. I've been in the Brunswick County Sheriff's Office, and that is not the only room they have available. The reason for that is it is a tactic for the jury. The camera's up high, so it looks down on everybody. And it makes Brandy Lewis look very, very young. She's in a very large sweater, it looks like. And she looks like she's probably, in this video, I don't know, 10 or 11, 12 years old. And it's a sympathy thing. It's a game. Trials are nothing more than a game. Either the state wins or the defense attorney wins. That's what a trial is. There's no such thing as innocent until proven guilty. You're guilty. In the United States, especially in North Carolina, you are guilty until proven innocent. That's the way it works. So they've got her in this room. The agent comes in his own words. I'm going to play that, I think. You know what? No, I'm not. I'm going to skip that. I'm going to save that. Everybody's probably throwing shit at the radio right now, but I am going to give you a teaser. Here is Brandy's, the actual deputy that walked off the case. Her name's Donna Simpson. She walked off the case, quit the sheriff's department, and I'm pretty sure it was right after this interview was done. So, she's asking Brandy about, I'm having to remember that name Brandy because that's not her real name, so I'm trying real hard not to say her real name. But she's asking her dad about, no, the deputy is asking Brandy about whose computer it is and who has access to it. Here's what she had to say. Oh, and by the way, the volume is incredibly low. So if I think it's too low when I start playing it, I'm going to crank it up, and I may have to play it a second time so you can hear everything that's said. Whoever did the audio work in this interrogation room shouldn't be doing it anymore. Here we go.
You say, if you remember when you saved that file, the ABC file.
Now, the guy speaking is the FBI agent.
Did you know there was two hard drives on the computer?
Now that's Brandy.
Now under my documents, you have to log into that computer when you log in.
All right, I'll start that over. Let me explain that. The FBI agent, Charles L. Gent, is asking Brandy, did she know there were two hard drives in her computer? And she says yes, in her own words. All right, here we go. We'll start it over. Here we go.
You say, if you remember when you saved that file, the ABC file, do you remember, the hard drive that was on? Did you know there was two hard drives on the computer?
She said they're looking for a file, particularly child pornographic images. She's trying to tell them where they're at. All right, let's back up. I just talked over that. Here we go. Right here, he's going to ask her, how does she log in? Does she log in under her name, or does she log in under her dad's name? There's a point I'm doing. I have a point. I promise you. Bear with me. Quit biting your nails. Just listen up. There's a point here. Listen very closely. Listen.
Log in under your name, or do you log in under somebody else's?
My dad's.
Log in under your name, or do you log in under somebody else's?
My dad's.
You have to log into that computer when you log in. Do you log in under your name, or do you log in under somebody else's?
My dad's.
All right, you just heard it. The FBI agent asked her, do you have to log in? Yes. Do you have to log in under your dad's name or somebody else's? Brittany responds, my dad's. Now, here's the point. We know that it's her dad's computer. Otherwise, why in the world would her dad have his name on the computer, right? So as we end up listening to this further and further and further, it turns out that this computer is not only her dad's, it's the brother's, and it's Brandy's. So now let's listen to the rest.
He said Johnny was to make that password.
Okay.
And it was there when I left.
Now, right there, they're talking about an email, I think it was, between her and the guy's name is Buddy. Bud is his name in my book. An email between her and Bud. Now, her and Bud, they actually did find some very, very filthy emails between the two of those. And they had nothing to do with me, but somehow it landed up in my file. But that's what they're talking about right there. And then the deputy is going to speak up, and Brandy is going to make reference to when I was standing in the kitchen. If you remember, read that in the book. I was standing in the kitchen with the mom and the dad, or no, the dad and the dad's girlfriend, and there was something that I was discussing with the dad. And if you want to find out what it is, you'll have to tune in a couple more shows down the road or read the darn book. Here we go.
Did you leave it up?
Nope.
Are you playing with the computer?
Nope.
Now, that man speaking there is, his name is Lou. That is the mom's boyfriend. Remember now, in the book, the mom and dad split up. Both had boyfriend, girlfriends. So in this interview, there was the mom, the blood mom, and then the mom's boyfriend. His name is Lou. Then there's Brandy. Then there is Charles Gent. And then you're going to hear another female voice speak up, and that is Miss Donna Simpson.
You ever tell him that he's on the computer?
I wonder if when Dad told I don't know what Dad talked to Luke about.
That's Donna.
Getting the ambulance. They were staying in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. Dad told Luke.
I'll just back that up. Donna Simpson speaks up, and she's trying to theorize why this email is missing on her computer. She's going to say that I talked to her dad, and that her dad took me to a computer, and that I deleted it. That didn't happen. But they're going to end it by saying probably that's what happened. So no one actually accused me of that, so listen up.
When I was getting the ambulance, they were staying in the kitchen. Mom, Dad told Luke, excuse me, Luke told Dad how she's been stalking him. Dad allowed him to go on his computer and start probably digging around and stuff. But my documents, because he could have got to that without your password.
Yeah.
Anybody can. If my computer was on, then they'd get anything they wanted to. What about with your mask?
Now, what they're talking about is my documents folder in that computer. That's where they found the child pornographic images, as well as bestiality images. And there's another one here that Charles Gint proclaims that's not illegal. But we all know it is. Possession of child pornography is illegal. If a 10-year-old child takes pornographic images of theirself and they store it on device or print it, then it is possession of child pornography. The law makes no exceptions to its own law. I'm going to play that back again, and they kind of roll into the child pornography. Here we go. Right here, she says, Luke told Dad that you've been stalking him.
Dad allowed him to go on his computer and start probably digging around and stuff. Like my documents, because he could have got to that without your password.
Yeah.
Anybody can. If my computer was on, then they could get anything they wanted to. What about with your MySpace?
They couldn't get you on my computer.
They didn't have my password, and they'd never guess that. I think my mom tried.
All right, I'm going to hit one more for you, and I think I'm going to give you a taste of the child pornography since I'm making such a big deal about that. If you go to my website, mofobooks.com, M-O-F-O-books.com, you'll scroll down to one of the tabs. I think it says featured author, and there's some pictures that are uploaded on there. The very last picture, you're going to see a disc. This is the disc that, well, these are the images. On the disc, you'll read the words, Child Pornography Removed by Special Agent Novelli. His name is on the left-hand side of the disc. The words Child Pornography Removed is on the bottom portion of the disc. Here's what they're talking about.
But that's just my dad.
Anything
in the notes
that you
would
consider
to do? Did y'all print out that whole
conversation with Bobby? I found
Here it is.
I've checked both hard drives. I found where it had been opened recently. But it's been deleted.
Listen.
Along with a lot of other stuff that's been deleted on there. Yeah. Not everything was deleted, but most of the stuff relating to that has been on there. And I can see where that file was there. That doesn't mean it's over with. We have some other methods we can go back in and delete stuff.
Now, if you didn't hear that, he said we have some other methods that we can go back in and delete stuff. So he's talking about deleting the child pornography for her. Here, I'm going to back it up a little bit. Let's listen to that again.
We have some other methods we can go back in and delete stuff.
I'll play it for you again.
We have some other methods we can go back in and delete stuff.
Darlene said she was going to delete everything off my computer before they needed
it
anymore.
Oh.
I asked her not to.
How recent was it open? How many exact days? I mean, it was a short question recently. I don't know. Don't check. But that's probably, we think somebody that probably deleted some stuff, you know. There was other stuff on there, nothing illegal, but potentially embarrassing stuff. You know?
There you go. You heard it. There's some other stuff on there. Then he says nothing illegal, but it's some embarrassing stuff. Yes, it was illegal. It was child pornography. They were nude pictures of Brittany and her girlfriends that her dad, we know that her dad had access to, and so did her brother, and they were not hidden. They were in the My Documents folder. So somebody please explain to me why an SBI, a North Carolina SBI, State Bureau of Investigation special agent, is offering to delete these images from her computer. That is a felony. That is a federal offense. Let's listen to that again.
Yeah.
Other, not just yours, but other people in the family. I've been looking at, you know, they might get hurt. We think somebody they probably
just backed it up.
Yeah. You know. There was other stuff on there, nothing illegal, but potentially embarrassing stuff.
Yeah.
Other, not just yours, but other people in the family. I've been looking at, you know.
You heard that. It said not just yours, but other people in the family. Let me back that up just a tad bit. Here we go.
Other, not just yours, but other people in the family. I've been looking at, you know, they might get hurt a little bit. The point is, we're gonna have to go back through and look. I mean, we got some stuff that can hopefully dig deeper in there and can pull some things up. That's just something else we'll deal with down the line. You got a word in your head, you think we can do that?
All right, there you go. You heard it with your own ears. That is from the actual interview that they recorded that I guess, like idiots, they forgot they were being recorded. That was Charles Gint telling her they have some other methods they can use to go into delete it. That was approximately September the 11th, 2006. If you look at the disc, go to my website, mofobooks.com, mofobooks.com. Look at the disc. Find the pictures. Look at the disc. Examine that disc very closely. You'll see my name at the top. I'm the defendant. Left-hand corner, you'll see S.A. Novelli. That is an FBI agent, that was a friend of Charles Gint, and a former FBI agent, Charles Gint. Beware South Carolina. Those of you down there listening, he is a South Carolina special agent now. And he is a corrupt individual, very corrupt. You heard that. That wasn't my voice. That is an actual recording. He's telling this little 14, I guess she's 15, girl that he had found some embarrassing stuff on her computer that he was going to delete it for her. You heard it. And then he says he found some other things maybe that the family was doing. Those were bestiality images. And if we go back to where she admits that her dad, she had to use her dad's name to log in. So let me ask all the fathers, and let's even pretend even the mothers out there too. Let's say you have a daughter, and you are sharing a computer with her. All right, and she uses your name to access the computer. There's apparently only one name to access on that computer. And everybody knows what and where the My Documents folder is. It's not hard to find. Most computers, it's on the desktop. And I believe her computer was running Windows 98. My police laptop, which they took an image of, and the police desktop at work at my police department run on Windows XP. The computer they seized from my house was my son's computer, a very piece of trash, very slow Windows 95. So we got Windows 95, belonged to my son, 98, belonged to the Lewis family, and then Windows XP, the police department's operating system. The properties of those child pornographic images that they found and deleted for her, and then thankfully for me, but stupid for the FBI Special Agent Novelli, he marked the damn disc, child pornography removed. Why? I'm speechless here. Why would you do that? I tell you why they done that. And all pieces of the puzzle here will start coming together if you'll just buy the damn book. Buy the book. Read the book. This is important. If you go into the book where I'm fighting with the judge to have a forensics done on my computer, by law, I'm entitled to have that forensics completed by an outside resource, not the state. The state would include the FBI. They are the enemy in my case, in this case. And I had found an outside resource to do that and tried to push to get the funds to do that. It was $8,000. Thankfully, my family managed to scrounge up $20,000 or $25,000 to pay Mike Ramos. Little did we know, we paid him $20,000 to put me in prison. Well, the judge asked the state. Let me find it here. Here it is. It's pretty simple. It's coming up. Here it goes. I'm arguing with the judge. The judge asked me, basically, what do you want to say? Well, to begin with, I've requested four different times for a change of venue. I was ignored. Also, yesterday, the date of this trial was September 22nd, 2008. That was a Monday. On a Sunday, September 21st, my uncle, my wife, and myself met with my attorney for a pretrial briefing. And he then, if you'll read the book, you'll discover that my uncle asked my attorney, he says, what was the most damaging evidence the state has against Luke, Luther in this case? And Mike Ramos replies, the emails. And I've had this special honor of having a couple of friends over that have reviewed these emails, and I hope one day to be able to show you these emails. And I know we're over, but I'm going to keep on going because this is too damn interesting. The emails that were I'm referring to, I had found numerous copy and paste errors. They had me answering emails before they were even asked of me. For example, the time is 4:05 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I would have just answered a question that doesn't get asked of me until about 9:30 tonight. How is that possible? I'll tell you how it's possible. I'm psychic. No, the real answer to that is it's a copy and paste. I hope one day to have the capability of showing that to you. I'm hoping it's through the media. I'm hoping that an actual someone will do an interview and will show you these emails. Actually, the whole world will see these emails. This is a joke. These emails are a joke. So anyway, I'm arguing with the judge about having the forensics done. And then my attorney speaks up, remember, on the Sunday in our little pretrial briefing. My uncle asked what he did. My attorney responds. And I said, why haven't you done a forensics on my computer? And the argument's pretty heated. And my attorney responds, they were unable to match up anything. I slammed my hand down on the desk, jumped up, and I said, what? You knew all this time and you didn't tell me? He fumbles with his words. I mean, they were unable to retrieve any emails. And in the book, you'll see that I lightened the load a little bit in the book. As far as me leaving the office, I left that office in a mess. Yes, that I'm guilty of. I destroyed his office. But then again, I knew I was going to prison, so I had the right. So here's I'm arguing with the judge. Also, yesterday, I found out that there is some possible evidence that hasn't been examined that could very well show my innocence. In my eyes, there is evidence attempting to be presented that's come off of one computer, and there's no other computer to compare it with. If they aren't willing to pull any files from my computer, I basically have no defense. The judge speaks up and says, Madam DA, do you want to be heard? Now listen, this is very important. Listen up. Grab a book. It's page 178, halfway down. Your Honor, I'd say this case had been pending for 2 years, and this is not my memory. This is coming out of the transcript of plea hearing. I actually copied it word for word, and then eliminated their redundancy. Your Honor, I'd say this case had been pending for 2 years. There has been ample opportunity to obtain any kind of expert that they wish. There are two computers that were seized, one from the department's patrol vehicle, my laptop, and one from the police department at the Bowling Spring Lakes. No full forensics was actually requested or done on the ones from the police department. And there has been 2 years to do that, but no full forensics has ever been requested or done. And then turn in the book, you'll look up and you'll see something called, what the hell did I call it? Conspiracy facts? Are you listening to me? Conspiracy facts? Yes? Okay. On page 241, conspiracy facts. Let's flip real quick to page 241. This is an actual fax. Again, I showed my guests that were here in my studio a couple of weeks ago. These actual faxes, okay? So they exist. Here's what the fax says. This is a fax from my attorney to me. No. This is a fax from the prosecutor, Meredith Everhart, to my attorney 1 month prior to my trial. Here's what it reads. Dear Mike, Here are the details you requested per our meeting. Also, as I stated on the telephone, I wanted to give you notice of some motions that I will be filing this week, and then asking to be heard. Please let me know if you think of any of them need to be heard ahead of time, and if necessary, we can find a judge in civil court this week. The ones that are most important are paragraph number 3, false allegations. There are several mentioned in the discovery provided by the state is Meredith Everhart and Charles Gent, to you, you is my defense attorney, that contains several third-party hearsay statements that, if believed, would tend to indicate that the victim has previously made accusations of prior physical and sexual abuse against several individuals, including a prior boyfriend and her own father. We have no reason to believe that the victim ever made such accusations. I got news for you, listeners. That is not third-party hearsay. Third-party is if you go to somebody and you say, I heard Luther say this. That's third-party. If I'm telling you something right now on this show, you're listening to my voice. That's called first-party. You're hearing it directly from my lips that this occurred. All right? That's called first-party. So in the back of the book, you're going to read the actual case file. Those are real case files. You're actually going to read where the father's telling them. The father, she told me, she being Brandy, told me that her father molested her. Her father, in the book, his name is Ralph, he actually told the investigators that she's accused him of molesting her. The brother, she admits in this video that we have that her brother has attempted to rape her. And then there is an individual that they interviewed that I gave a ticket to for racing. So there was reason for him to not like me. However, he did state in his interview to SBI agent Charles Gent, he said this. He offered up a recording. He said, I recorded her accusing a friend of his, I believe his name was Ryan in the book, of molesting her. He offered up this recording. And the SBI agent, I don't know whether he took it or not, but other than that interview, I would have never known it existed. Finally, we move on down into this facts a little bit further, and here's what we read. Now, after this interview I just played for you, Deputy Simpson up and left the case. Just 1 minute she's there, the next minute she's gone. She actually quit the Sheriff's Department for many, 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 many months. And I've since got word that she's back, so I'm hoping she gets word of what I'm doing, and she comes forward and she tells why. So, Simpson, if you're listening, you can really shed some light on this case. Do the right thing. Come forward. So the facts continues. In addition to these motions, I also want to let you know that I spoke with Richard Novelli from the FBI again this afternoon. He does actually have the computers from Luke's patrol SUV and the computer from the BSLPD. He never did a report on them. But he is going to get me a report by tomorrow on what is on both of those. From speaking with him, they both show that Stidham was going to MySpace on those computers. I don't know if he was able to retrieve any emails, but if he did, I will pass them on to you tomorrow. Now let's go back to my hearing. Page 178. I'm going to repeat what Meredith Everhart said 1 month later. 1 month later. At my plea hearing. The judge asked, Madam DA, do you want to be heard? Your Honor, I'd say this case had been pending for 2 years. There has been ample opportunity to obtain any kind of expert that they wish. She then went on to say, there are two computers that were seized, one from the department's patrol vehicle and one from the police department at Bowling Spring Lakes. Here's the words. Here's the magic words. Here's the magic paragraph. No full forensics was actually requested or done on the ones from the police department. And there has been 2 years to do that, but no full forensics has ever been requested or done. But yet we have a fax. I have hardcore proof fax dated 1 month prior to her deliberate lie at my pretrial hearing that she's notifying my attorney, Michael Ramos of Charlotte, North Carolina, that she herself requested the forensic. So in the book, the next page, 243, I simply say, someone who has nothing to hide, hides nothing. What was she hiding? She was hiding two things. One, that they did not find those crazy looking, I mean, these things are crazy. I mean, it's not because I'm the one convicted here that I'm saying that. I have people that have looked at them, and they laugh. They shake their head. One of them sat here in tears. I'm not making that up. I'm dead damn serious. One sat here in my studio looking at these emails with tears. These things are crazy. I mean, how in the world they got warrants on these emails, I'll never know. But according to the lie Miss Everhart told, 1 month prior to that, she's telling my attorney that she herself has requested the forensics, and they're hiding two things. One, they did not find those emails on my computer like I knew they wouldn't, because I didn't write them. And two, I would have been entitled to an outside forensics. So therefore, that she was fighting me in court to get an outside forensics, so she deliberately lied to cover up the fact that had I have gotten the outside forensics, that outside forensics is mandated by state and federal law to report to the FBI the discovery of any child pornographic images. If that would have happened, in addition to these false prior allegations that the prosecutor is asking my attorney not to bring up, the case would have been destroyed. And I would still be living at the beach. I don't know that I'd be wearing a badge because I was just too different. And, you know, I had a customer, I'm going to change the subject real quick, kind of, sort of. I had a customer that was reading my book in my shop. And he said, would you go back to being a cop? My answer to that is an unequivocal, not only no, but hail to the no. And the reason for that is I'm not cut out to be a cop. Not in today's world. 20 years ago, I would. In today's world, there is no place for a person like me to be a cop. It just, there's no such thing. It just does not exist. Finally, let's finish up this and then we're going to end the show. I know you guys probably got things to do, and I'm very honored that you've joined me. We'll hit one more commercial after I hit this last paragraph of this fax, and then we'll close the show. Here we go. Now remember, after this interview, Donna Stinson left. Well, something disappeared with her. That something was, remember me talking about the recording that you just heard where they're talking about the child porn? Well, Donna Simpson also video recorded the initial interview before she called in the FBI with Brandy. With Brandy. And that's where she was making the allegations against me. Now pay attention here. This is important. In addition to these motions, I also wanted to let you know that I spoke with Richard Novelli from the FBI. No, never mind. We'd already read that. Skip forward. Finally, I want to let you know that I have someone from the Sheriff's Department trying to locate any additional information that they might have retained in Deputy Simpson's file when she left regarding the case, including a copy of the victim's interview, both the recording and transcript. Disappeared. Why? Why did the recording disappear? Why did the transcript disappear? So a second transcript had to be produced from a DVD recording that did not exist. How is that possible? I'll continue. They are supposed to let me know by tomorrow if they have anything. In the meantime, I would appreciate it if you could have your office fax me a copy of the transcript that you have of the victim's interview with Simpson. I don't have that for some reason. Maybe you don't have that because the damn thing was a lie and a certain somebody named Deputy Simpson walked off the case because she saw the corruption involved and wanted nothing to do with it. Perhaps that's the truth. I don't know. That's my opinion. I don't know the answer to that question. All I do know is the damn thing disappeared. That's the bottom line. It disappeared. And until this very day, right now, you're listening to my voice, That DVD interview has not resurfaced. It is gone. Why? She then finishes up the facts. Thanks. And please let me know if you think there is anything else missing. Sincerely yours, Meredith Everhart, Assistant District Attorney. So her and my attorney had such a pretty relationship that she was able to ask my attorney to replace this transcript, in other words, to furnish her evidence against me, and then ask him, hey, look, if you think there's anything else missing, why don't you let me know and just forward it to me, by the way. Help me out here. And I'm sure there was some kind of deal made. You know, you give me this, I'll give you that type of thing. Anyway, thank you for joining me. And I am going to jump right into my book commercial before we take off. And then I'm going to close the show. Thank you for joining me. My name's Luther Stidham. Be sure and tune in next week. If I am not able to book a interview for next week, because the show is not just about me, it's about everybody. This is your show. This is your opportunity to tell what happened in your situation or someone that you know. If I'm not able to do that, then I'll pick up where we left off, and I'll play the rest of that stuff for you. And then I've got another show planned where I have to wear a bracelet, a GPS bracelet, and until I'd done something about it, they were repeatedly calling me. Like, they were saying that I was not moving for 4 hours, which is not true, and waking me up at all hours of the night. I have an app on my phone that records all incoming and outgoing calls. So I have a lot of goodies for you. Here we go.
Suppose you were accused of a crime you did not commit. Now, how far would you go to prove you're innocent? Hi, my name's Luther Stidham. Want to help me right the wrong? Just pick up a copy of my book, Falsely Accused, Forever Branded, at your favorite bookstore or on Amazon. Or better yet, make a donation of any amount at mofobooks.com. That's mofobooks.com. Next week, and remember, America, this is your show.